cruising through the Masechta. We are in Chof Dalet Amar Aleph. You see where it says Bekapara, period. End of previous statement. So if you remember, we are in the middle of our discussion over pig walls, or elephant walls, or sheep walls, or whatever you want to call it. Cow walls. Zok the Gemara, Bein Laman de Amar Shema Tamos, Bein Laman de Amar Shema Tivrach. So you had a statement by Rabbi Meir, the Tana. Rabbi Meir, the Tana, said that you may not use an animal for a wall. The question is, why not? So the Gemara had a machlokes, Abai and Rabbi Zera. Abai said, we're afraid that it's going to die. Rabbi Zera said, we're afraid it's going to escape. The Gemara had a whole discussion, what's the nafkamina, and stringing animals up and all kinds of fun things. So Gemara says, okay, you see at the end of the day, that whether you hold by Abai or Rabbi Zera, whatever the rationale is, why Rabbi Meir said you're not allowed to use an animal for a wall, those concerns are gzeros. Gzeros are deraisa or derabanan? Derabanan. All gzeros are derabanan. Okay, there are certain types of gzeros made deraisa, but we don't call those gzeros really. There's something called yichud and being shomer negia, and that may be a deraisa harchaka. There are certain things that are certainly deraisa types of gzeros, but that's not what we mean. The Torah says something is asur, the Torah says something is mutter. If something is prohibited, the Rabbanan say, okay, you should stay far away. We don't want people accidentally trampling the garden, so we make gezeros. So if we're going to say that the reason why an animal is no good for a sukkah wall, if the reason is either because we're afraid it's going to die or we're afraid it's going to run away, both of those are problems deraisa or problems derabanan. Derabanan, it's a gzeira. Really, the wall's fine, but we're afraid of something. We're afraid it's going to run away. You won't have a wall. We're afraid it's going to die. You won't have a wall. So either way, technically speaking, deraisa, you can make a wall out of an animal. It's just that we're afraid something's going to happen and you won't have your wall anymore. Therefore, came the rabbis and said, you're not allowed to do it, because then it could be you don't even notice that the animal died, and it was lovud, and now it's slouching because it's dead, and now you don't have a legitimate wall. You're not eating in a sukkah. You're not makai in the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay, it's true. It seems like most gzeris are because we're afraid someone's going to violate something. Isn't that true? Gzeris are there because we're afraid someone's going to violate something. Isn't it an isser to eat outside of a sukkah? Or you're just not makai in a mitzvah? So that's interesting. That's something to consider. Why in this case would there be a gzeira to make sure you fulfill a mitzvah? That's unusual. Okay, but file that away as something to ponder in your spare time during class when you're bored. But in any case, the Gemara says, clearly, these are both gzeiros. So, deraisa, midi araisa mechitza ma'aliyah hi. From the Torah's perspective, on the level of the Torah, it is a mechitza. Just mechitza just means a wall. It's a wall. Ma'alia means it's good. He, it is. It's a mechitza ma'alia. It's a good wall. It's a valid wall. The Rabbanan who, and it's the Rabbanan, the gazru ba, that made a gzeira in it. The gzeira, you're not allowed to use the animal for the wall. Okay? So that's a statement of fact so far in the Gemara. The Gemara so far just made a statement. Ela me'ata. So now that you've said that, rather from now, the Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, who said that an animal's no good, that's derabanan. But deraisa is good. Titma mishum goylel. Let it be tamei if it is a goylel. What? So if you remember, goylel is a machlokes rishonim. What exactly the goylel refers to? But we'll just keep it simple, straightforward. The basic gist of it is there are certain things, whether it's the covering of where a person is buried or perhaps even a tombstone, whatever it is exactly, there are certain stones that are involved in the kavura site, in the burial area, that have a status of actual, as if it's a dead body. That's called the goylel. So even though all it is some kind of rock, some kind of stone, it's not a dead body, but because it facilitates it in one way or another, machlokas rishonim, but whatever it is, they have tuma like a dead body. Goylel, whatever it is, has tuma like a dead body. Fine. So we wanted to know if you're allowed to use an animal as a goylel. And that's part of that machlokas rishonim. If it's a tombstone, what are you going to get the animal to stay there? You'll tattoo on it, here lies so-and-so, and then you plant the animal there for the rest of its life. If it's the cover of where the person's buried, what the animal's going to stay there, covering that, whatever it is. But, okay, can you use an animal for the goylel? And what did Rabbi Meir say? He said that if you use an animal for these purposes, it does not serve, it doesn't count as a goylel, it's not good enough. And therefore, what's the halachic consequence? If it doesn't count as a goylel, it won't be tamei mace. It won't have tumas mace. Because it's not good enough, it simply doesn't function that way. Pause, full stop. Let's think this through. According to what we've said in Rabbi Meir thinks that an animal does serve as a wool. But we're afraid it's going to run away. Yeah? So if you build a sukkah with an animal as a wool, technically you're yotzei mitzvah sukkah. So the Rabbanan said don't do it. In this case, you use an animal as a goylel. If it's really a legitimate wool, then it should also be a legitimate goylel. But we're afraid it's going to die or run away. Dying in this case might be better. But we're afraid that it's going to run away. So we don't let you do it, and therefore it doesn't have tumas mace because we don't want you doing it. But deraisa, it is. So wait a minute. To tell someone that the wall of their sukkah is no good, so, okay, that's a chumrah or a kula? To tell someone that their wall is no good is a chumrah or a kula? It's a chumrah. We're saying, really, it is good. But we want you to use something better. It's a chumra. To tell someone that this animal, which really d'oraisa is a goylo, and really is metame tumas meis, and we'll say, it's not, because we don't want you using an animal. Excuse me. And what happens to the kohen who contacts this, or walks under the same roof, or whatever? What happens to this kohen? D'oraisa. He becomes tame, correct? So by saying that an animal being used as a goylel is not a valid goylel, is a chumrah or a kula? It's a huge kula. It's saying that something which should become tamei and should create a lot of problems, no, it doesn't. Okay, so first of all, can the Rabbanan do that? Can the Rabbanan say that something which is tamei deraisa? No, it's not. Can they do that? That's question number one. Question number two is, let's imagine that they can. Is that a good idea? Is that consistent in Rabbi Meir? If Rabbi Meir's whole concern is that the animal is not going to function as a wool, but here, what's his concern? It won't function as a goylo. But it is the raisa? I thought he's being machmir. And here he's being mekel? Does that make sense? We should be machmir in both directions. We should say, when it comes to wall of a sukkah, it doesn't work because we're afraid it's going to run away. When it comes to goylel, it is a goylel because we're machmir on it. So if you hold de'oraisa, then an animal won't function as a wall. And de'oraisa, an animal won't function as a goylel. We're consistent. Because we're not making gzeros we're afraid of something. It's because it doesn't work. It isn't a wool. It isn't a goylel. By definition, it's an animal. And for some reason, animals can't be wools or goylels. Okay, then it's consistent. But if it's a gzeira, gzeiros are made to keep people away from problems. In this case, by the sukkah wool, it does keep someone away from a problem. But by the goylel, it doesn't keep someone away from a problem. It makes more problems. Because he does become tame, but he doesn't know it. Did the Rabbanan take away the tumah? And if they did take away the tumah, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Who are they protecting? Do you hear the kasha? Should I try saying it again? No? Good? Okay. That's the kasha. The Gemara. If you don't get it, you can, you know, look it up. We'll discuss it later again. Titma mishum goylel. But according to, if it's just a gzeira, the Rebbe Meir, it should be tamei. An animal should be tamei mishum goylel because he should be machmir. Alma Tanan, but we learn in the Mishnah Rabbi Huda Metamei Mishum Goylel. Rabbi Huda says it is Tamei. Alts Goylel, it is considered to be a Goylel. Rabbi Meir Metaher. Rabbi Meir has a star. Come, what? How could that be? So based on this, the Gemara actually, so to speak, throws a bayin Rabbi Zeir in the garbage can. It can't be that that's the pshat in Rabbi Meir. Because if that was the pshat in Rabbi Meir, then Rabbi Meir can't say that it's tohor mishum goylo. And if you remember, this was Rabbi Meir's list. Rabbi Meir himself had on a list that it can't be a sukkah wall, it can't be a goylel. He had a list. And this is one of the things on his list that doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara backtracks and says, Ella, rather, Amar Racha Bar Yaakov. Racha Bar Yaakov said, Kasava Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir thinks, meaning we're back to where we started now. When Rabbi Meir said that an animal cannot function as a sukkah wall, why not? Kasava Rabbi Meir, holds, Kol mechitza shemedes v'ruach, eino mechitza. Any wall that only stands up, that only exists due to wind, due to spirit of some sort, eino mechitza, is not a wall. So what do you think that means exactly? How did you understand that? What do you mean, a wall that only stands up due to wind? Like an inflatable wall? I don't think they had inflatable walls back then. What does that mean? It stands up due to the wind. Well, spirit of life. Ruach meaning Ruach Chaim. Anything which requires Ruach Chaim that man certainly can't, has no role in. That's up to God. Anything which only exists due to some sort of divine spirit of some sort or another, that's not called a wall. It's hard to know what that means exactly. Like, why not? Because it's a wall, not a thing, and it has to be inanimate. It's a little bit hard to know what's going on over here. So, but that's what the Gemara says. We'll do the best we can. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says, Rabbi Meir holds a mechitza that only exists due to ruach, in this case, ruach chayim, eina mechitza, is not a legitimate wall. Does Rashi help us at all? Rashi, four lines from the bottom. That it stands up, it exists through spirit or wind. Lav mechitza he is not a mechitza. Rashi says the ikar amidasa davar she'ein boi mamish hu. What does that mean? Let's translate it. Help me out here. Ikar amidasa. What's ikar? The main or the essential. The essential amidasa. What allows it essentially to stand? Davar she'ein bo mamish hu. Davar she'ein bo mamish hu is a thing that doesn't have any substance to it. There's no substance to it. Somebody say pshat in this Rashi for me. What's Rashi saying? Rashi's saying a pshat, right? He's explaining to us why something that requires ruach is not a valid mechitza. What's Rashi's pshat? Read the words and translate and explain to me. What's Rashi saying? No pun intended, right? No pun intended. No soul purpose and soul. Yeah.
It shouldn't be there to be just a wall that shouldn't have anything else to do.
That's what Rashi's saying?
Yes, he's saying that it shouldn't have, what's it called?
Isn't he saying that the animal's purpose is not to be a wall?
Yeah. That purpose? That a wall should, that if you make a wall, the wall should just be there to be a wall. The animal's not made to be a wall.
That's what he's saying, purpose. The Ikra Midas you're saying means its purpose. Is that how you're translating it?
Yeah.
So how do you finish the sentence in Rashi? That its essential purpose is? To not have mamish?
Does that mean that the Ikra of the actual living thing is a Dover Shaver Mamish? It's a spiritual thing itself?
Yeah.
The living of it? So a wall, when it comes to a wall, there's no Dover Shaver Mamish. It's tactile. This is what it is.
Yeah.
When it comes to an animal, the Ikra of its in, the fact that it's able to stand from a ruach chayim, that is a davar she'ein bo mamish.
Okay.
I don't know why.
And therefore what?
Wall with a wall.
Why not?
Because davar she'ein bo
mamish. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're almost there. Suiza, help us, Suiza! Save us, Suiza!
A wall can't be a davar she'ein bo mamish.
Tzarich svaradi. Come on, you've got it. You're there. You're right there. Amiel, what is it? Come on, Jason, you got it? What's Rashi saying? Joseph, you want to chime in? You got GF Rashi? David? It's pretty hot and stuffy here. Thank you. Come on, you guys have got it. You're on it. You've got it. Come on, Benji, come on. Let's read it again. Read Rashi, remember. Remember, Chevra. You have to trust Rashi, just like the Rashi we learned last week. You have to trust Rashi. He means exactly what he says, not more, not less. The Iker Amidasa. How do you translate that? The best translation. That what essentially allows it to stand. You hear that? The Iker of its Amida. What allows it to stand. What makes it stand up. Is a davar she'ein boi mamishu. Is something that has no substance. Why is he saying that? What does he mean? And why do I care? How does that explain this? And therefore, it has no substance because it's not part of the physical world. That's, I get that. It's a soul of some sort. What allows the animal to exist and to stand and to function as a thing is ruach. Ruach is a davar she'ein boi mamish. Because it's a davar she'ein boi mamish, it can't be a wall. But what do you mean? What?
The wall has to be yesh boi mamish.
Okay, a wall has to be yesh boi mamish. The wall has to be a physical wall. It can't be totally imagined, although we've seen several that are imaginary. We've seen good asik, good achis. We've seen interesting things where it seems to not be mamish. So it's an interesting question. But we'll push that aside too. And we'll say, okay, it has to be a davar she'yesh boi mamish. It has to be physical. Even those have to start with something physical, right? Okay. But this is something physical. Bessie is physical. She gives me milk. It's physical. So what do you mean? But because Iker Amidasa, because what essentially allows it to stand and exist is something she'ein boi mamish. It can't, because okay. I will give you a mushroom that hopefully will help you to understand this. Cheese. Cheese. Is cheese kosher?
Yeah, depends on how they made it. Cheese.
What makes cheese kosher? What makes cheese not kosher?
When they fermented in the enzyme used. Yeah, because they can find from the cow's stomach.
Correct. If the cheese is produced using rennet that's from, you know, the stomach, this, that, the other thing, right? If it's from these problematic enzymes, then it will be problematic. Otherwise, it will be fine. How could that possibly be true? Wait a minute. We know, we all know, there's a concept called batel b'shishim. If it's batel, you can't taste it, you're good to go, correct? Here you have a teeny enzyme. Do you taste it? Does anybody know the difference between, you know, the enzyme in the stomach and something else, the way the kosher ones are made? Can you tell the difference in taste? The answer is no. You will not know the difference in taste. So then what's the problem? Are you ready for this? I am going to introduce you to a very interesting concept. It applies to sukkah as well. It's called a davar hama'amid. Davar hama'amid. The thing that allows it to stand. That allows it to be what it is.
So this enzyme, like,
what does the enzyme do to it that makes it cheese?
It ferments it, holds it together.
It makes it cheese. Otherwise, it's milk, it's gooey, it's what? Cheese is a hard substance that, I don't know how else you describe it, but how would you describe the difference between cheese and milk?
One's solid, the other one's liquid.
So what makes it that consistency is the enzyme. So is the enzyme batel in the cheese? Obviously not. It's recognizable in the cheese because that's what makes the cheese. So even though, Benji, please take your thumb out, even though it's batel b'shishim in the sense that you're not going to taste it, is it batel in the sense that it lost its existence in the cheese? 100% not. Because that's what makes the cheese. Okay. Does that help you? What does that do with us? What allows the animal to be an animal is its ruach. It only exists, it only stands because of its ruach. And since the ruach is a davar she'ein bo mamish, it's as if the animal is a davar she'ein bo mamish. It's a davar hamamid. You like it? You think it? Here? Is that pshat Rashi? That's the pshat Rashi, right? That's what Rashi said. But because, let's read it again. The Iker Amidasa, the essential what allows the animal to stand. Davar she'ein boi mamishu is something that has no substance. So what? Because a wall has to have substance. And what allows this to function as a wall is something that has no substance. then it has no substance. We view the animal as it has no substance because the ikar of it has no substance. That's what Rashi's saying, Chan the Gemara. Okay. So that is the answer, says the Gemara, to why Rabbi Meir said you can't use an animal for a wool. It's not because of a gezerah. It may run away. It may die. No, no, no. It's because it can't function as a wool because it doesn't exist as a wool.
So if I kill it, I can use
it as a wool. In a sense, that's what the Gemara may have said before in a certain way, although that was a gezerah. But you're asking a good question. If it's dead, but you use its skins as your wool, nobody ever objected to that. But if you're using something that has to stand as an animal, then you're right. Not because Xayra is going to fall down and not be a shear. Even when it's standing there, it's only standing there because of the life that's in it. If it would die, it would fall down. Okay, if it is dead and it's big enough to be a wall, then maybe you're right. That sounds like that should be fine.
What about other living things? Like, is that the same like when it comes to plants or like a tree or something? I mean, a tree may not fall over, but it is alive.
Seemingly not. It's not the same thing.
Because an animal's going to fall down.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yaakov, because of Rabbi Meir, kol mechitza shrei medes beruach eina mechitza." Fascinating idea that an animal that only stands with its spirit is not a mechitza, as Rashi explained. Ika de Amri. There are those that say, "Amar Rabbi Yaakov said something else." Kasavar Rabbi Meir komachita sheina asuya bide adam. Rabbi Meir holds any wool that is not made by the hand of man, eina mechita, is not a wool. Something that's not man made is not a wool.
The way he describes it here is air.
What? What do you mean? The first one. So we looked at Rashi. We said Pshat with Rashi. We saw how Rashi explained it. Now we're going on. So now they say, Ikad the Amri is, that Rabbi Yaakov said something else. He didn't say it had to do with the wind, the spirit, whatever you want to call it. But rather, any mechita that's not man-made is not a wool. Really? Is that true? Because that sounds strange, right? Because that means you can't make a wool out of like a mountainside. You can't make a wall out of a pre-existing physical structure. What? A natural structure you can't use for a sukkah? That's not true. Okay, so you have to adjust this a little bit. It's not as straightforward as it sounds. It means it's something which a man could do equally. A person can pile stones. A person can do all kinds of things. So if it happens to be naturally like that, you could use it also. There's something which man could not do. Man cannot make an animal stand because you can't give it life. So that's out of your hands. Sounds like exactly the same thing. Right? Sounds like exactly the same thing. What's the machlokas over here? There's an Ikad Amri, the first opinion holds that something which doesn't have, something which has ruach, you can't use. Second opinion is no, something which man can't do, you can't use. Come on, that's the same thing. Because the nafkamina is like, you know, the case where it comes to, you know, is because it has a life. What?
The second one is more general. Something that man can't do. So there's more to it than just...
Give me an example. So what would be an example which would be an nafka mina?
You can't create nature.
Not
about just giving something like it's neshama, but it's also just anything that... Like there's just... I can't think of one thing because there's just so many things that we
can't... Oh, pick one then.
You can't fly. You can't do like so many things.
Okay, but you're not going to make a wall out of flying, so it doesn't matter. But how would this apply to a wall? What do you say? Anybody?
The second one.
So, here we go. You ready? Should we go on?
According to the first one, something that was... what does it mean, Dover, like a man can't do? A man can dig grip.
A man can what?
Can't do.
A man can what?
Meaning a man cannot give the first shot fits into the second shot. The second shot does it. You know.
So give me an afkamina. That's fine. So give me an afkamina.
So I'm saying is what's like the extent of a man can't do? A man could technically mound up to build a mountain. Or
yeah. So therefore, he could use a mountain.
Right. And he can use like a massive hill, like a Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay, so the Gemara asks this question. Ready? Mai Beinai. What does Mai Beinai mean? What's between them? What's the difference between them? What's nafkamina? Ika Beinayu, there is between them. The difference is the oikma that you, I don't know, you stood up your schach maybe, or the wool itself perhaps. Benoid tapuach. Tapuach doesn't mean an apple. It means from the word lahafiach, it means like air. That there's a noid tapuach, what does that mean? Noid means like a container. So the way that Rashi writes, samach adoifen, the wool would fall down, but it's not falling down because what's leaning up against the wall is that the wall is leaning al hanoid tefuach baruach. Noid here means a leather container that is blown up with air. What would we call that nowadays? An inflatable wall, an inflatable something that's supporting the wall. Why is that a nafkamina? According to the one that says Rabbi Meir holds, you can't use something that only stands with air, with wind. Well, then this one is essentially air. The one who says that the issue is that it has to be something that's made by man, what's the problem? This is made by man. He made it. Made the inflatable wall. Wow! This is interesting, no? Can you use an inflatable sukkah?
That'd be cool.
Yeah. If it's made out of inflatable walls, and what's keeping it standing is air, if you poke a hole in it, the wall will collapse.
Yes,
that may be invalid de'oraisa, according to one of these mahalchim here. Wow. Because essentially, it exists due to air. And air is a davar she'en bo mamish. And that doesn't work.
So it's a model that was made of every piece of wood. Like, the whole thing is structured together because it's going to fall apart a second. It's not, you can't make that. Yes,
don't live in that type of world. We live in our physical world. Yeah.
Why can't you say that if I have a structure, if I have a sukkah made out of whatever, fiberglass, or the wind is just as likely.
No, not wind taking it down. That's a different issue altogether. We're talking about what allows it to stand up. What allows it to function is wind or air. Wind is a bad word. It's air. An inflatable wall is a perfect example.
Wind is air. It's just a gust of air.
But how would a gust of wind ever stand up a wall?
The lack
it blows it down.
Yeah, but the lack of wind. Because there isn't wind.
That just means it's not oime beruach metsuya, ruach she'ena metsuya, right? That's the issue of will the wall stand up against the wind. Is it a valid wall? It's a substance. It's substance. No question about it. The question is, it may be too flimsy. It's going to fall down. That's a separate issue. Here, the issue is, according to this approach, Rabbi Meir is saying, that if what allows the wall to stand up is air, which is a davar she'en bo mamish, it's like a davar amamid. It's the thing that stands it up, so that is considered that, meaning the physical wall is considered air.
If I take something and blow it up,
yep.
It's like one of the, like an inflatable, you know, go to the beach, you get the circulation, so I blow that up. If it wasn't...
The swimming pool.
I'm sorry?
The separate beach. The swimming pool.
Of course. So
yes, go ahead.
If I blow it up...
What's a mixed beach?
I don't know.
They're all separate. They have to be mixed. You have to mix them up. Yeah.
If I blow that up, yeah. It never would have been anywhere. It's not the wrong place. It never would have had air in it. Had
yeah,
it not done
right.
So I am creating the crevice for the air to fall.
It's man-made.
But that is man-made.
It's man-made. That's why, according to the one that holds, it has to be man-made. It's good. An inflatable well is good, according to him. But according to Manda Umar, that if it's essentially air, it's air, then it's no good.
If I blow something up, you're saying, according to the one that says that it has, according to the one that says it has to be man-made, when I blow something up, it is man-made.
Yes. It's man-made if you blow it up. Correct. But according to the other approach, that's the nafkamina. The nafkamina is an inflatable wall. So.
Hey, why is it? Why? It wouldn't be different than like a. Let's say you filled up the wall with water.
If you filled up, let's say you had a water wall. Is water a davar sheyesh by mamish? Can you make a sukkah out of ice? Out of water? I don't know.
Ice.
It's a good question. I don't know. Interesting shayla. Water is something yesh by mamish. But it doesn't usually stand up as a wall. And if you were really good at doing Kriyas Yamsuf, and you went ahead and you made a sukkah out of the water. Yeah, ice good enough. Maybe that's good enough. Why not? It's Because you're going to assume it's going to melt. It doesn't melt. Yesh b'mamish. Yesh b'mamish. Could be? Could be, it's good. Okay. So that's that's the Gemara until there. That seems to be the Maskana. It's not Gemara, by the way. The Gemara seems to conclude with this. So this discussion we had with Abai and Rabbi Zeira does seem to be procedurally rejected by the Gemara. So what are we left with? That we seem to be left with this idea. We're not sure if it's defined, an animal is defined essentially by its spirit, and therefore it's not considered a davar sheyesh bo mamish, or if the problem is it was have to be something that man could do, and that's really the problem. So the nafka mina would seem to be an inflatable sukkah. It sounds like an inflatable sukkah. It would be a serious shaila. Do we paskin like Rabbi Meir though? How do we paskin? Anybody know? How do you figure out if you're a betting man without looking it up in Shulchan Aruch? How do you know how we paskin on this? No! Yeah, so how do you know? Where do we have to figure this out from? So you have to go back to the machlokis, right? Where was the machlokis if a wall can be used, if an animal can be a wall? Where is it? Chof Gimel or Aleph, right? Who can figure it out? Who do you think we're basking like? Someone figure it out.
We hold a verb.
Yeah?
Yeah, we don't.
So if you look in Chakim al Aleph and you see where this is quoted, Machlok is Rumeir Rabbi Yehuda, the letter that points to what? The letter for the what? How'd you figure it out, Yosef? The letter for the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. Everyone please look on Chav Gimel Amad Aleph in the middle. Do you see where it says, it's a little bit lower than the middle, two-thirds way down, it says, Asal Vahema Dofen L'Sukkah, Rabbi Meir Poisel, Rabbi Huda, there's a little letter there, yeah? Machshir. That little letter in my Gemara anyway is a Gimel. That is the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah's Gimel. Do you see it? It says, Maimon Sham Halacha Tes Zion. That means Rambam. Then it says, Tur Shulchan Aruch, Arachayim Simen Tov Reish Lamed, Seif Yud Aleph. Shall we read it? Shall we read Seif Yud Aleph? Zok the Mechaber. Osim Mechitza Mibale Chaim. You are allowed. You can make your walls from living animals. That you tie up the animal there for your wall. Why in the world do you need to tie it up? I thought it was kosher. So as the Gemara said, what? I thought that wasn't the reason. That's Rabbi Meir. It's not the reason Rabbi Meir holds its bustle. But if you hold its kosher, don't you have to be nervous the animal's going to run away? The answer is yes. If you hold its kosher, like Rabbi Yehuda, you have to make sure the animal doesn't run away. So you will have to tie it up. Gam sarich shetiyei mesucha lamala b'chabalim. You have to make sure that it's tied up above with ropes. O shetiyei goyva kolkach shaf im tirbat tamus v'tipol. Because even if it dies or falls, yegavoy asar tfachim, it'll still be 10 tfachim high. So it's interesting. The way we learned the Gemara, we learned the Gemara all within Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara wanted to know what's Rabbi Meir's problem with an animal for a sukkah wall. Gemara started off with gzeros. We're afraid it's going to die, or we're afraid it's going to run away. Gemara says, that's ridiculous, because then how can Rabbi Meir say that it doesn't function as a gaila? That's a kula. So Gemara wipes out Rabbi Meir and introduces a totally new idea about a wall that stands with wind, or a wall that's not capable of being made by man. That's really the reason Rabbi Meir says it's no good. And the Gemara has a nafka mina with the inflatable wall or an inflatable support for the wall, and the Gemara ends there. So we say to ourselves, oh, so it sounds like the Gemara is dealing with Rabbi Meir. I guess we paskin like Rabbi Meir, otherwise why are we spending so much time on him? And now we want to know, wow, halach lamaisa, what about an inflatable wall? And you look it up in Shulchan Aruch, and it's totally wrong. What's wrong? We don't pass him like Rabbi Meir. Okay, wait a minute. So now we got to work this out. Rabbi Yehuda holds that an animal is kosher for a wall of a sukkah. So we figure we're done. Because we rejected all this gzeira business. And now apparently animals are kosher for walls. But then the Shulchan Aruch says, but only if you tie it up. Why should you need to tie it up? Rabbi Yehuda apparently is not concerned for any of these things, right? Rabbi Yehuda says an animal is kosher. No. You still have to be concerned. You won't have a wall at the end of the day. Rabbi Meir's reason had nothing to do with the gzeiros. But the gzeiros are still correct. They're still true. You still have to be concerned that the animal's going to run away. So you got to tie it up. And even if you tie it up, you still have to be concerned the animal's going to sit down or it's going to die. So you're still going to have to string it up in a way where it will always be 10 tefachim. But are we concerned that animals are no good for walls because of wind or anything like that? Not at all. Inflatable sukkah kosher? Why not? You can use an animal for a wall. You just have to make sure you string it up. Because we're afraid of it running away or dying. But it's not in and of itself, it's not a problem. In and of itself, an animal's fine. You just got to make sure that it doesn't run away. Good? So is an inflatable sukkah kosher?
Yes.
Yes. As long as you make sure it can stand up, it doesn't blow away or whatever, you know? But technically speaking, an inflatable sukkah is kosher. What?
Bounce house sukkah.
There you go. It sounds like it should be kosher. Next. Top of Chavdal Amid Beis. Let's get to the Mishnah. Amr Mar. The master said, Mishnah B'Yosei Aglili. Amru. In the name of Yosei Aglili, they said, Af Ein Kaisvin Alav Gitei Nashem. You're not allowed to write a get on an animal either. Why would you not be allowed to write a get on an animal? Someone asked this when we originally mentioned it. And so, you know, we said we had to come back to it. The Gemara will address it eventually. This seemingly has nothing to do with us, but it's thrown in to the list because, well, it's a list of things you can't use animals for. It's okay, you can't tattoo the get on an animal as creative as it sounds, and you can't give the get tattooed on an animal to the woman as a get. My time, Rabbi Yosei Aglili. What is the reason that Rabbi Yosei Aglili thinks you cannot tattoo a get on an animal and give it to a woman? This Ani, as we learned in a Braisa, there's a pasuk, if you have those fancy gemaras, the pasuk says that when, you know how this whole parsha of get is like really funny, the way it's written in the Torah? The Torah's agenda, it's a bunch of run-on sentences. The Torah says when a guy will marry a woman, and he'll see something that he doesn't like, and he'll divorce her, and he'll have to give her a get, and it describes the get, which is what we care about right now. And she, it goes on, it's a run-on sentence. And she goes and marries someone else, her original, and then divorces him, and she gets divorced from him. So she's been divorced twice. So again, Reuven marries Shprinza. Reuven divorces Shprinza. Shprinza marries Shimon. Shimon divorces Shprinza. The end of that sentence, a run-on sentence, is Reuven cannot remarry Shprinza. No wife swapping. That's like the goal of the whole parsha over there. But in the whole run-on sentence, you find a few details about marriage, and you find a few details about divorce. And that's the essential parsha, ki yikach, ish isha, that kicha mistei Ephron, the details of kidushin, as well as v'kasev l'sefer krisus v'nasan b'yada, and he writes her a book of separation, and he puts it in her hand, the details of get are also presented there. So what we need to know, so if you have one of those fancy gemaras with the pasuk on the side, it says, Ki yikach ish isha ubala, when a man will acquire a woman and have bia with her, but it'll be if she doesn't find favor in his eyes, Ki matza ba'ervas davar, not because he didn't like the way she cooked, it sounds like, but rather because he found in her an ervas davar, something which was seriously inappropriate. Maybe she was with another man or something. Then he may be obligated. What I'm alluding to is, when it comes to the world of other religions, there's a big issue, when is a man allowed to divorce his wife? The Gemara discusses this as well, and discusses in Gittin, at the end of Gittin, when exactly a man is allowed to divorce his wife as well. And there's a big machlokes over there amongst Tanoim. And over there, the Gemara says, well, Ervas Davar. The Torah is saying that a man divorces his wife only when he finds something seriously inappropriate about her. However, we certainly don't pass in that way. I think it's Rabbi Akiva over there who says even if she burns his food, it's just that there is a prohibition for a man to remain with his wife who has cheated on him, who has bia with another man, and he is obligated in that case to give her a get. In other cases, it is optional. But if he finds an erevas davar, then there's a mitzvah, because of la sefer krisus, he writes for her, this is the code, the keyword here, sefer, which sounds like, what is a sefer? A book of krisus, what's kares? To cut off. So he writes her a book of separation, of cutting off, v'nosan biyada, and he places it in her hand. V'shilcha mi beiso, and he sends her out of his house. So these are the details that are necessary for gerushin, for divorce, to be legitimate. So our Gemara says that Rabbi Yisrael Glili said you're not allowed to use an animal for a get. Why not? There's a brisa that says sefer, because of a sefer krisus. He has to write her a book of separation. Ainli el sefer. So I guess you have to use a book. You have to use some kind of paper or something like that, or klaf, something that you would normally write a book in. Minayin l'rabba is called davar. How do you know that you could use anything? Talmud leimar v'kasav la. V'kasav la. It could have just said, v'nosan la sefer krisos. Give her the book of krisos. Why did it say, v'kasav la sefer krisos? That's extra words. V'kasav la sefer krisos, mimikol makoim, you have to write it on something. Something. Wait a minute. Well then, im kain, if so, ma talmud leimar sefer. And why do you have to say the word safer? Just right, because of la krisus. Why does that have to say safer krisus? You can have it both ways. If you're going to use the word book, and it implies something you normally use as a book, then you're also going to say, oh, but it says because of la, you have to write it, you can write it on anything you want. Well, then why do you say safer? You can have it both ways. Loimar lecha, the word safer teaches you, ma safer davar sheima ruachayim, ve'enoi oichel. A safer is something that isn't alive, and it's not food. Anything that's not alive and is not food. Why in the world are we picking on alive and food and our other details? Okay, good question. But that's what the Gemara picks on over here. So what did the Gemara just say? Rabbi Yossi HaGlili is coming from this Braisa. The Braisa says, V'kasav la sefer krisos. You write her a book of separation. You don't have to say V'kasav la. Because you could have said, give her a book of separation. Then we'd know that it has to be in a book. Why do you have to say, write her a book of separation? Sounds like you can write it. Write it on anything. Well, it can't be anything, because why does it say safer? So we have to balance the two. You could write it on multiple things, but it has to be somehow similar to a safer. So there's a ribui, there's an additional something, v'kasavla, and there's a mi'ut, there's a minimizing of it, by saying in a safer. So how do you balance what you can and cannot write it on? Answers the Braisa. You're right, you can write it on anything, provided it's similar to a sefer in the sense of two things. Number one, that it is not alive. And number two, is not food. For whatever reason, it picked on those two things. And that's where Yisrael Glili is coming from. So you can't use an animal. Why? The priest's going to run away? The priest's going to die?
It's alive.
It's alive. It's not a sefer. And eventually it'll even be food. Maybe. Rabbanan. So what about the Rabbanan who say that it's not a problem to use an animal? How do they say that? What happens to the drasha? Ikasav ba-sefer. If it would have written v'kasav la ba-sefer krisus, you write it in a book. Kideka amrit. Then I would agree with you. You have to balance the writing and what it's written in. Hashta. What hashta? Now, dichsiv, it writes. It's written. Sefer, not a base, not ba sefer. V'kasav la sefer krisos. He writes her a book of division. Wait a minute. So a book is describing what it's written in or the manner in which it's written. because of a sefer krisus. He asked the writer a sefer of krisus. L'sfiras devarim ba'alma hu de'asa. To the telling over of words in general, it is coming. To the telling over of words in general, it is coming. What do you mean? That when a person writes a get to his wife, it doesn't necessarily have to be written in a sefer, says the Rabbanan. It has to be written like a story. And he gave her the get, and she was thereby divorced. The end. And they live happily ever after. Or whatever. But it has to be written in the manner of telling it over. So the first approach said that sefer is describing the actual object. The rejection of it by the Rabbanan is, it doesn't say write it in a book. It says write it like a book, in the manner of a book. What's a book? What's the significance of that? You can't just give her something that says buy. It has to be that what you give her says, and he gave her this book, and she was thereby divorced. It has to be that the object itself tells a story. So how do you read it? That's the machlokes. Is it a description of object, or is it a description of manner in which the object is written? Good? Rabbanon, hai v'kosav mai darshibe. Very nice. So then what did Rabbanon do with v'kosav? It could have said v'nosan la sefer krisos. You don't have to have v'kosav la. What are we including if everything's already included? Because you could write it on an animal, you could write it on anything according to that, as long as it's in story form. What do they do with v'kosav la? Hahu mivayiluhu v'ksiva miskareshes v'ena miskareshes v'kosav. That, meaning v'kasavla, those words, mivoyilahu, are needed for them. V'ksiva miskareshes, with writing, she is divorced. V'eina miskareshes, and she's not divorced, v'kasef, with money. What? Why would you think you could divorce a woman with money? In other words, this really goes back to the idea that this whole is revolving around, according to them. You have to divorce the woman with the story of this divorce. You can't just get rid of her the same way you married her. You could have suggested, it makes a lot of sense, but the way you marry her is by giving her this shava kesef called kiddushin. So the way you annul it is by the reverse. She gives it back to you, you give it to her. I don't know, however that's going to work. Maybe it should have worked in exactly the same way. Now, this is a fascinating idea. We should really spend more time on it. But we're not going to because we're learning Gemara Sukkah. But if we're learning Gittin, think this through for a minute. He acquires her, right? No, he doesn't. But that's what it sounds like. He does an act of acquisition in order to make the connection between them. So you'd expect, how should it reverse itself?
He has to give her something that shows her that she's not like...
Yeah, is that what you'd expect? When you acquire, I hate to say this, but when you acquire a slave, you buy the slave, right? And now you own it. How does the slave get free?
When you say
he buys it, he has to like acquire himself. He has to become free, meaning he has to cease being an object owned by the other person. See if somehow he could acquire money, which usually he can't, because he's owned by the guy. But if somehow he could acquire money, he'll buy his freedom. Maybe somebody else can buy his freedom. So you'd expect a similar type of structure by marriage, right? If the way in which the relationship is created is by him doing an act of acquisition, so she should have to do an act of acquisition to acquire herself back. Right?
When she's too young, she goes back to her father. She acquires herself. She's older.
Yeah. Maybe someone else can get her out of it, maybe. Maybe someone else can get her out of it. But she has to get herself out of this acquisition. So you can understand how that makes a lot of sense. If it starts with some form of acquisition, so it should be an acquisition that releases her in one way or another. That's at least a thought process. So the Gemara says, Salka daitech amina, it would have occurred to your mind to say, would have arisen in your das, in your mind, amina to say, Hoyol ve'iskish yitzia lahavaya, since there is a hekesh, a connection between yitzia, leaving, and havaya, becoming married. Right, yitzia means leaving a marriage. Havaya means becoming married.
Sounds like kiddushin.
That's what we're saying. There's a comparison. The heckish, right? Ma havaya bekesef. Just like they become married with money. Af yitzia bekesef. So too, I would have thought that going out of the relationship is with Money. Now, it didn't say who gives it to who. You notice that? It didn't say him giving it to her. So how should she leave it? I would have said her giving it to him. Take your ring back. You know what I mean?
Isn't this exact tech issues? Everything.
Yes. Because we do have a tremendous amount of connections between the two. There are a tremendous amount of connections between the two. Havaya and Yetziyah are connected. Yeah.
So with when it comes to the Kesef and Shtar, yeah, maybe the sacred priestess was made in the case where you can't do that, like in the case of a marriage.
Well, that's the Kamash Malan. Kamash Malan, that's exactly why it says V'kosavla. V'kosavla is to tell you that that's not correct. Kamash Malan, period. Kamash Malan means it comes to teach you that's wrong. That's wrong. But anytime you find this, you should just realize to yourself, that's what would have been true. That is what would have been true. This pasuk, v'kasavla, is to tell you that that hekesh is not correct. It would have been true had it not been for the words v'kasavla. This is a Kaddish Baruch Hu's way of telling you, I don't want you to say that hekesh here. You should have. Should have. But you're not going to say it because I'm telling you v'kasavla has to be written. It has to be words written on a paper. Why? Okay, so we have to think about it. But that's the din. Uh-oh. V'Rib Yosi Aglili. Hai Svara Min Ale. How does Rib Yosi Aglili know now that you use words and she can't just buy herself back? Where does he get it from? He uses V'kasavla to teach you that you can write it down, what? On anything that's like a sefer. Our answers. Mi sefer krisos nafkala. From the word sefer krisos, he learns it out. Sefer karsa vein davar acher karsa. It has to be a sefer. Now before we said it had to be like a sefer, so it can't be an animal or food. Here he's saying more than that. Not only can it not be an animal or food, but it actually, that the way in which she is divorced is with that thing. It's a sefer krisos. So it is the sefer that does the division between them, and nothing else apparently can make the division between them, meaning you can't use money to separate. You have to use this object, whatever it's written on, to separate between them. V'idach. Wait a minute. So now what did the Rabbanan do a sefer krisos then? Why don't they say that? They say Sefer Krisos means it's again a description of the Sipur. It's a description of the way in which it says that he's divorced from her. What do you mean? Kidisani, as we learn in a Braisa, Hareza Giteich, if a guy says to her, this will, behold, this is your get, Al Menas Shalaitishtiyayin, on the condition you never drink wine again. You want to be divorced? No problem. On condition you never drink wine again. Here's your get. You want it? On the condition you never set foot in your father's house again. You want it? Ein ze krisos. Doesn't work. Even if she would say, okay, I'm willing to do it, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It would not be valid yet. It's nothing.
Even if she agreed, it would be nullified?
Correct. It would be nothing. It wouldn't be good. Why is that? Because they're not separated. Makes you wonder, whenever there's a divorce and there are children, if they're ever really divorced, you know what I mean? They're never going to be divorced. But that's not a condition in the get, so it's valid. But there are things that maintain the relationship. What he's saying, if in the get, there's a forced maintenance of the relationship. She will never again drink wine because otherwise she won't be divorced anymore. She's never really divorced from him. She can't do whatever she wants. She can never drink wine again. It's going to kill the divorce.
Or if she gets married in between and then drinks wine later on, then what happens?
She committed adultery. Retroactively. Yeah, no, it's real, seriously. If the Tanai was, this is your get, on the condition you don't drink wine for the next 30 days, kol shleishim yoyim, you never set foot in your father's house for the next 30 days. Hareze krisos. That is a valid separation, a valid cutting off. So do you hear what they're saying? They're saying that when it says Sefer Krisus, it doesn't mean that Sefer Karsav lo davar acher. It doesn't mean this is the thing that separates and can't be anything else like money. That's Rizag Lili. What the Rabbanan are saying is, again, within the Sipura Dvarim, the way in which the story is told can't be with anything that keeps them together. So if it keeps them together for 30 days, that's fine. Because, okay, so after 30 days, she'll be completely independent of him. But if there's going to be something that she'll have to maintain the rest of her life, or retroactively it'll kill the get, that's not called a separation. Yeah?
Remember we had that Gemara earlier with the get will be in a second before I die? What if he throws that on her and says, you can drink wine up until a second before you die, and then you're divorced? Meaning it's a condition. You're not allowed to drink wine until a second before you die. If you hold up to that, then you're divorced.
Okay, that's a legitimate technicality. You know, is that enough time? Because then can she do something about it? She can't do anything about it. A second before
But it's, because it's not, there's a time.
Okay, all right, so we got to learn to get into the cases come up. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. So Rabbi Yosi Aglili, does he think that a man can make such a tzai? Does he think that a man is allowed to say, as long as if you never go to your father's house, you never drink wine again? Because how is he going to learn that? The Idach and the other, Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Mikares Krisus Nafka. It doesn't say Sefer Kares in the singular. It's a Sefer Krisus. A Sefer, a book of cuttings. Wait, you don't need to say that. It should have said Sefer Kares. Why is it in the plural? Why is it in the plural? He says, that's Marbit. Other details like that one. The Idach and the Rabbanan. Why does it have to say it in plural according to them? No, Kares, Krisus, Leidarshi. It's a book of cuttings. That's the way people speak. Don't give me a hard time about that. That's a normal way of talking. Singular, plural over there is of no significance, and therefore they do not learn any particular drasha out of the plural of Krisus as opposed to Sefer Kares. That takes us to the next Mishnah. In the next minute, tonight, what do we do? What's special tonight? Who knows? That's right. We switch over to Saint Tal Umater. What happens if you forget it? What's the halacha? So let's quickly go through Shulchan Aruch very, very quickly. If you forgot it, you go back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. Is that true in any situation? If a person forgot it in the bracha, so then what should he do? He says it in Shemaya Tefillah. You can still say the same Talamatar in Shemaya Tefillah. So as long as you did that, you're good to go. If he didn't remember at that point after Shemaya Tefillah, then what?
Repeat it.
Repeat what?
The whole Shemana Esrei.
Not the whole Shemana Esrei yet. Imaloy akar raglav chazim b'chaz hashanim. If you didn't uproot your feet, meaning you didn't finish Shemana Esrei, you only go back to b'chaz hashanim. Yeah? You do not go all the way back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. The only time you go back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei is if you totally finish Shemana Esrei. What does it mean, totally finish Shemana Esrei? That you're done, you know, you're doing your own thing, but you finished the official Shemana Esrei. But as long as you are still saying Shemana Esrei, then you still only go back to Birchas Hashanim. What exactly does it mean? Akar Raglav, off the place. The Mishnah doesn't say it over here. Says Mishnah Brura here. Yidchas, 1 second. Shulchan Aruch says, "V'im hishlim tefilaso." Guy finished Shemana Esrei. Ve'eino ragil loymer tachanun emachron tefilaso. And he doesn't say a lot of tefilos after he finishes the official Shemana Esrei. Right? A lot of people say a lot of things after it. Right? Af al pish adayin lo akaraglav. Even though he didn't yet take his steps back. Ki akurim dami, it's as if he did. Says Mishnah Brura, "V'hu adinim ragel lamer tachanunim." If a guy normally says a lot of his own personal tefillos after the official Shemana Esrei, "V'siim tachanunov," and he finished what he normally says. "V'amar acharem apasik yuleratzain," and he said yuleratzain, which is how we finish our Shemana Esrei, right? "Shevamiras pasik ze asah hesech hadas milamer oy tachanunim v'nishlam tefillosoi." So it sounds from the Mishnah Brura that when we're saying our Shemana Esrei, you know there are two Yul Ratzons, right? So if you normally say both of them, which I assume everybody does, because that's what's in the Siddur, so once you say the second one, you are finished with your Shemana Esrei. Once you say the second Mishnah, but as long as you haven't said that second Yilaratzon, it sounds like for the Mishnah Berurah, you can go back to Birchas Hashanim. You do not go all the way back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. If you said Yilaratzon, then you have to go back to the beginning. So again, if you forgot it in Birchas Hashanim, what do? You still say it in Shomea Tefillah. You don't go back. You say it in Shomea Tefillah. That way you don't have to repeat any names of Hashem. You say it in Shomea Tefillah. If you got to the end of Shomea Tefillah and you forgot it, then you go back to Birchas Hashanim. You do that even if you're all the way at the end of Shemana Esrei until you say that final Yilu Ratzon. Even though you didn't take your steps back yet, once you say Yilu Ratzon, oh man, did I say it? Too late. Now you have to go all the way back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. We still say the same Baruch HaMincha.